You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
All right, and welcome to the next episode of The Tattoo Shop. I'm your host, JC DeLeon, and with me, as always, is going to be my co-host, Michael Williams.
Hello.
AKA the Bearded Gentleman, or Bearded Gentleman on Instagram. We have a guest with us. The whole premise of the show is we're going to try really hard to have a guest every episode, which probably means we're not going to have an episode every week, because that's a little more problematic. But with us, you know her from OneOfUs.net and Raid Select, the incomparable Sarah.
Incomparable?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that word up.
You're one of my favorite people.
Oh, God damn it, JC. I'm all embarrassed. I can't do this thing.
Yeah. But yeah, she's going to join us this week, talk about some tattoos. She's got some cool experiences from Japan. We're going to go ahead and get into all of that stuff right now. So, Michael, we talked last week, I guess this is sort of a general introduction to the both of us, but... I wanted to get into, and we sort of veered off topic, which is totally cool, but sort of how you personally got started into the business of being a tattoo artist.
How I got started tattooing. Well, I got started tattooing by getting tattooed a lot. I come from a very unconventional form of tattooing, I guess, or way of becoming a tattooer. So originally I'm from Oklahoma. It was the last of the 50 states to legalize tattooing.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that, you know?
Tattooing legalized in Oklahoma in 2006.
What? Like, actually doing tattoos or...
Yeah. At the time before 2006, it was unregulated, so there were no licensing, therefore there were no tattoo shops. So any tattooing that happened before that usually was something like out of a house... garage, something weird and sketchy like that. So for most of my youth, from like 16 until, oh man, who knows? I got a lot of tattoos from my buddy out of a house, and that's just the way it was. Very interesting. You know, a lot of people like kind of wonder about that. They're like, 2006. Wow, that's crazy. I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like New York maybe legalized tattooing in like 96 or 97.
Wow.
Yeah.
So was it before that the police just kind of turned the other way?
You know, I think for the most part, I think it still happens like today because there's definitely plenty of people, even in a state like Texas where tattooing is regulated and there's plenty of tattoo shops, there's still people like tattooing out of their house, like doing tattoos. So I think for the most part, nobody like really cares until like, a minor gets tattooed and mm-hmm. a parent is upset about it, or, you know, somebody contracts some kind of like weird disease possibly from being tattooed in a unsterile environment like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it like a misdemeanor, or do you know, or?
You know, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. I never got caught doing it when I was tattooing out of my house, so.
Yeah.
Good.
That's good. And so, yeah, you just kind of started doing it on your own based on what was done to you, and you sort of figured it out, or?
Yeah, I think I got my first tattoo when I was 16. Real weird to think about it now, because at the time it just seemed like totally normal. Hey, I know this guy. He knows how to tattoo. Let's go get tattoos. And I was like, oh, awesome, yeah. And we show up to some scary, like, big biker guy's house, and, you know, he's got this homemade tattoo gun, like a little rig. And, you know, I'm kind of like a little concerned, like, you know, I want to make sure it's like safe. And I'm like, yeah, you know, how safe is this? Is this clean? He's like, well, I use a new needle for everybody. I'm like, all right, this is good. Now, granted, these aren't like tattoo needles. These were like bass guitar strings that were like hand filed to a sharp point.
Oh my God.
I'm like, all right, well, like, are those pretty clean? And he's like, I soak it in rubbing alcohol overnight, and I put it in the oven at 450 degrees on some aluminum foil for a couple hours. I'm thinking, this is real safe. Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like, you can sanitize your hands with rubbing alcohol, so why not needle that you're going
your
to put?
Homemade tattoo needle.
Yeah.
Do you still have it, or did you cover it up?
No, I still have it. I had it redone professionally. It was like these Chinese characters on my arm.
Mm-hmm.
So I got those done, and, you know, thinking back about it now and knowing just like all the cross-contamination, steps that I take to prevent any kind of, like, you know, disease from transmitting from, like, one person to another, like cleaning my station and the type of equipment I use. Thinking back about it now, I'm like, wow, what was I sitting in? Was it probably some fabric-covered chair that had never been wiped down? He probably, like, sits in it, like, while he's watching the football game. You know, who knows? Like, was he wearing gloves? I don't remember. You know, he could have been wearing bloody gloves and, like, drinking a beer while he was doing it. I really don't remember. I was 16, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's like, you put on gloves to do your, like, chemistry class experiment, so it's good enough. Yeah, if he's wearing, like, you know, loose-fitting surgical gloves or something like that.
So definitely,
kitchen cleaning gloves.
Definitely interesting in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So, I started getting tattooed. I got tattooed by that guy, and then I had a friend of mine. He got some equipment, and he would tattoo out of his house. He eventually got a job down in Deep Ellum in Dallas and was going down there on the weekends and tattooing at a shop, and would come back and then tattoo us. And I got tattooed by him for a few years, and you know, back and forth, he just never really wanted to make the move down there. And he's telling me, like, hey, you know, you should tattoo. You're a really good artist. And so I kind of did the same thing he did. I got some equipment. I started tattooing like friends and doing terrible tattoos for quite a while.
So you were always a good artist. So that's what you had the foundation of, at least.
I feel like I was always a good artist. I mean, I drew a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, people told me I was really good. But I had a friend of mine who I tattooed for a while, and he was a phenomenal artist, like way, way better than me. And he seemed very interested in tattooing, and so basically I kind of did the same thing. And that guy took off. Like, he tattooed, like, maybe out of his house for, like, 6 months, and then he made his way down to Texas and started tattooing at a shop, like, right across the border. And maybe a few months to a year into him doing that, he hit me up and was like, hey, you know, the shop I'm working at, they're looking for somebody. I suggested you, and they're interested and seeing, like, what you have. So, you know, if you want to come down here, bring your, you know, portfolio, stuff, you know, and they'll check it out. And this is, like, the first time I've ever been into a professional tattoo shop.
Yeah.
So, like I said, a very unconventional way into, like, becoming a tattoo artist. I go down there, I have some pictures, brought my equipment, brought a friend to tattoo, and they want me to tattoo that guy there, and they want to, like, watch me. So all of a sudden, I'm in a tattoo shop with numerous tattooers around. They're asking me questions about everything I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and when I'm not doing the right thing, telling me I'm not doing the right thing. And, you know, I just ask them, like, well, what should I do? And they start telling me. And I did the tattoo. It was nothing great, but apparently they saw some potential and basically just said, hey, we're willing to have you here and teach you everything that you need to know as long as you listen to everything we say and do it. You know, otherwise, like, you can, you know, hit the ground running. So, yeah, I made a move down there and I started tattooing, and we could probably talk about that shop some other time, because that would be a lot of talking.
Oh, man.
But it was interesting. It was a good time.
Yeah.
You know, off and on, like, I was there for probably a good year and a half, and I had a good time, and I worked with some, like, really awesome people who really took a chance on me and showed me a lot of stuff and taught me, you know, everything that really kind of became a foundation into, like, tattooing.
Yeah.
So, like I said, a very unconventional way to get into it, not a very regular apprenticeship of sorts, but you know, I got really lucky, and like I said, they saw something in me and took a chance on me, and here I am 12 years later doing tattoos still.
So what's a more conventional way of doing that? Like, I've never heard of, like, tattooing schools or something like that. Or, like, you know how there's, like, beauty school or whatever for hairdressers, or graphic design school for that kind of art. Are there tattoo schools?
There are some places that have things called tattoo schools. There's definitely, like, certain places that have, like, very strange or strict regulations on tattooing and how you have to become a tattooer. Typically, I like to compare it most to, in some ways, as being like a plumber or electrician. Mm-hmm. And if there's any plumbers or electricians like listening to this, and I'm totally way off, I apologize because I really don't know. But I feel like in that situation, that type of field, you do a lot of like on-job training. You know, I mean, there's not really any way to like, I mean, there's basic stuff to teach you. And that kind of goes in the beginning part of the apprenticeship. You know, they teach you how to set up your equipment, how to clean up your equipment, how to prevent cross-contamination from, like, one client to the next. You know, maybe teach you how to, like, process your equipment for, like, re-sterilization. And then, you know, teach you a lot of, like, tips and tricks on, like, drawing. You know, try to help you develop, like, a style. And, like, once you've been doing that for a while and you've been helping that person and you've been putting in the work of, like, drawing, maybe helping them set up, break down, you know, all kinds of things, whatever it is that they feel like they need to teach you, then you start doing tattoos. And, you know, you do, like, little tattoos until you get the chance to do bigger tattoos. And that's, you know, a lot of the ways that it was, like, whenever I tattooed, it just didn't really come from, like, one person. It didn't really come all in that order.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had my buddy Josh, who, like, taught me a lot and taught me as much as he could. And then when I worked at that shop, I worked with Bill, Robert, Jeff, and Josh. And, like, all those guys, super helpful. Like, each one of them very unique and good at what they did. And for the most part, all, like, pretty like, on point with what they were trying to get me to do. And so it was fun, you know. I had a lot of people help me out.
So the one of the aspects that I've always found really fascinating is the idea of the like apprenticeship, where like one artist, one guy, like teaching one guy. Is that not really the way it's done anymore? Or
no, I mean, that's definitely the way that the conventional apprenticeship would be. So, you know, if you're somebody who wants to tattoo, you would find somebody who would teach you how to tattoo. And so it's always like really hard for me to necessarily like discuss my opinions about it, because I haven't necessarily done that conventional apprenticeship. And, you know, there are a lot of people who would probably like frown upon that, and I don't blame them. I mean, there's a lot of times where I really wish, especially, you know, seeing some tattooers who have gone through really good apprenticeships and had really good mentors that just come out of that apprenticeship doing really good tattoos, and I'm like, man, it's like you can get there, like you can get to A and B so many different ways, but if you do it the right way, you get there faster and you're better at it. You know, it's like you could shave off years of like learning stuff so quickly. And a lot of that's a good apprenticeship. A lot of that's, you know, social media and like all the kind of like references and tattoos that you could see. Because, you know, like I said, growing up in Oklahoma, there weren't tattoo shops. So I didn't understand that. And I didn't see good tattoos. And then I went to work at a shop. And then all of a sudden I'm like immersed in this. But it's like if I could have like been immersed in that for a little while and absorbed it, and then started utilizing it, it probably would have worked out a lot better.
Yeah. So if lost my train of thought here. No, I got it.
So
I guess anyone listening, if they wanted to take the route of becoming someone's apprentice, like what's the best way to go about doing it? Because like I was with you at a convention this past January in Austin, and I saw a dude just kind of randomly walk up to, like, you and I were in the middle of a conversation, and he just kind of sort of walked up and was just like, hey, man, are you looking for an apprentice?
Yeah. It's like people, like, trying to hand out their scripts to directors. They see, like, trying to enjoy their lunch. It's like, read my script!
Yeah, and I mean, like, so the dude, he had a portfolio with him, I think I remember, but, yeah.
Is that the way to do it?
I mean, like I said, this is me speaking for myself. Like, I didn't go through, like, that traditional apprenticeship, so I don't know how well this will stand with a lot of people, but I feel like there's like an allure, an interest in tattooing. Like everybody just thinks like, oh, I can quit this like normal 9-to-5 job and I'm gonna have like this easy job tattooing. I'm gonna make all this money and be so cool and popular and I'm gonna be like this, you know, rock star and blah blah blah. And I mean, yeah, you know, tattooing is done well for me. It's good, but I mean, I work a lot. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of time and like, you know, drawing tattoos and talking to people and replying to emails and like sifting through stuff and, you know, working back and forth to in the end create a tattoo for somebody. And it's a lot of like a lot of work, a lot of hard work. I mean, there's so many days that, you know, like the shop I work at now, like our hours are 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I'm always there by 11, but I don't always leave by 6. You know, some nights I leave at 6. Some nights I leave at midnight. You know, it just depends on how the day goes. I mean, I try to like go into every tattoo and like not rush through them. I just want to get them done and done well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you have somebody coming to talk to you about that, you're like, you're just not seeing all this other stuff that goes into it. Like all this trying to manage your money because it's, you know, famine 1 week and feast the next week. It's just up and down. You gotta be very responsible, but it just seems so cool. So these people come in and asking for apprenticeships. I don't have much interest in ever apprenticing somebody unless I see somebody who shows like, you know, potential. Like I want to look at their artwork and I want to know that they're not a total turd and that I feel like there's some kind of like level of mutual respect between the two of us.
Yeah.
And if I spend all the time sharing with them everything that it's been very difficult for me to learn over 12 years, like I want to be able to share everything with them, like teach them every trick I know. And I want them to turn around and take all that and be better than me. Like, I want to, in a good way, be jealous of them. Like, like, man, like, I gave you this and you became something greater.
And I think I remember even specifically you told this guy, like, you want to be able to learn something from him, too. Like,
I think I heard
you say something to the effect of you want whoever you teach to end up being better than you, but you also want to learn something from them in return.
Yeah, I see a bunch of people, like, all over, you know, being apprenticed to become tattooers, and, you know, I don't necessarily know all the people, but they don't seem like that's, like, their end goal. You know, their end goal is to have fun and party and make money, and, like, I just think, like, if somebody really wants to, you know, apprentice a tattoo, like, they need to come with something, and they need to put in, like, the hard work and make it worthwhile for somebody to share that information with them. And like I said, I mean, I didn't necessarily go through the most conventional way, but it sure as hell wasn't an easy way that I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot of like drive and dedication and a lot of self-motivation to push myself through all that to get where I'm at. And I'm not just going to hand that over to somebody, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand how people could think that it's easy or that it's like you can party all the time. Like, I mean, anybody who's gotten a tattoo, anyone who's like sat down in a chair and gotten a tattoo knows that. Some music just went off too. Mm-hmm. The artist is focused and it can be physically grueling and you're sitting there for hours and hours, and not to mention preparing and doing sketches and dealing with people who are saying, yeah, I want this. And you have to say, no, you can't do that. I mean, maybe because I'm a more realistic person and I have no like aspirations to be a tattoo artist, but that it just seems like a ton of work to me.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a lot of work. I definitely don't feel like everybody that I have to, tattoo has like that same opinion, which sucks. I mean, I really do wish like some people appreciated what you did. You know, sometimes I feel like a lot of people just feel like it's a job, like you have to do it, you have to do whatever I want. Speaking of which, yeah, so earlier we were discussing like a meme, my wife and I. There's a meme that's been going around on like Facebook, and I don't know what it's from, but it's this girl who looks like very upset, and she's like, tattoo artists are assholes, like, all I wanted was an infinity symbol with 5 names on my finger. And, you know, I see all these, like, YouTube videos, and there's been, like, blogs, like, where all these people, like, write these, like, terrible experiences that they have in, like, tattoo shops where they feel like they didn't get what they wanted, they didn't get it how they wanted, where they wanted, when they wanted, me, you know, and I will say in, like, their defense, there are plenty of tattooers out there who probably don't have, like, the best bedside manner.
Yeah.
Like, they may not be the most polite. They may not be the best at, you know, explaining to somebody, like, why them as a tattooer can't do the tattoo that they want.
Yeah.
And are quick to just say, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Nobody can do that. That's impossible. You know, I see all that, and, you know, me and my buddy started talking, and basically it kind of came down to, why be so upset if, like, some tattooer doesn't like your idea and doesn't want to do it? Like, yeah, okay, I get it. That sucks. But maybe you should find somebody who likes your tattoo idea and yeah. wants to tattoo it on you. I mean, I don't get this whole, like, just expecting a tattoo artist to just do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's artist in the name for a reason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, we're all trying to do our best. So, I mean, if it's something we don't feel like we're going to do well, but you want to force us to kind of do it, I mean, do you think it's going to turn out good?
Right.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people should have a bit more respect and, you know, try to go in and find somebody who actually, like, can do or does stuff that they like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've had customers, like, come in and they're like, I'm interviewing you. And I'm like, well, this is good because I'm interviewing you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I definitely would like it if you and I got along. I would like it if we're on the same page. It's going to make things easier, you know? And I'm not saying I'm going to be, like, picky and, like, not do some stuff and, like, you know, just because I don't want to. I mean, art's art. I mean, yeah. I do a ton of tattoos that aren't necessarily stuff that's, like, my style. Maybe not stuff that I necessarily, like, really like or would want to have on my body. But I can tell that it's important to the person. It's something I can do. It's something I can do well. And I want to do that for them.
Yeah. Like, to give the listeners an example of, like you and I personally, like, there's probably for months now, it seems like there's a spot on my arm where I keep coming up with ideas to try to fit. And I keep, some of my ideas are maybe too detailed or they're hard to shrink down. And so you're very honest with me in the feedback. And, like, it's something that, and either sometimes it may not either, you'll say it may not look good with everything else that's on there, and I totally appreciate and that feedback and like it and look forward to it, and yeah, I think that's what makes you a great tattoo artist.
And that's sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, that's the perfect example. I mean, the ideas you have are good, and I tell you they're good. It's just maybe something that doesn't work there. And, you know, maybe that's just me.
And
maybe,
I don't take it personally.
Maybe there's somebody out there who, like, would be like, I could totally do that there. I don't think that they would work there, and I'm just trying to share that with you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you, you know, putting a lot of trust into me and saying, okay, well, we'll find something better that'll work there. Because I think you definitely have other places where we could put all of those designs you sent me that would fit better and, like, look better. And so, I mean, that's definitely the best way to handle it. And I'm not going to say I'm always right. I mean, there's times when a customer gives me an idea, and I'm like, this is not going to work. And then, you know, we work on it for a while. And I think that maybe, like, maybe it was just in my head. Maybe I just didn't want it to, like, work. Because I just didn't necessarily think it was a good idea or it was going to look cool. But working on it together, come to the realization that, hey, it actually does look pretty cool when we do it. And then they're happy, I'm happy, you know. I mean, it definitely, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta give a little, they gotta give a little. You know, definitely, like, if I don't give it all or they don't give it all, it just doesn't work out.
Yeah. So, Sarah, I was going to bring you into this a little bit.
Hey,
so
Jesse.
You have a really cool raven on your arm.
It's a crow. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I didn't know. I didn't know if it was crow or raven.
That's okay.
And it's very cool.
Thank you.
Kind of, what was the, unless you don't want to say why. Or...
I actually have three crows on my person. Two on my back. One is like a clockwork crow with full feathers and stuff. And the other one is a crow skeleton with some feathers and a blue rose. And then I have one on my left arm that is kind of like a nature textbook drawing style of a crow. So they're all like very different styles. And My goal is to get, like, all crow tattoos.
See, what's cool about that is, like, my last name being De Leon, like, I have three lion tattoos on me. And mm-hmm. at one point, I think I even, when I first met you, I was like, I kind of don't want any more lion tattoos. But when I look at designs I want, I'm like, I kind of want more lion tattoos.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's kind of, you know, if that's what you like, screw it.
Yeah, I mean.
Where are those people, man?
People ask me a lot, like, oh, why do you crows on you? And I'm like, well, I think they're beautiful birds. They're very intelligent.
Super intelligent, yeah.
And I feel like my personality is kind of like a crow. I can make a lot of noise. I eat other people's garbage.
Hang out at H-E-B.
Eating garbage. And I'll steal cigarettes and stuff. So, yeah. No, I mean, honestly, I just think crows look really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm very pale. So the, like, dark purple against my skin, I think, looks pretty cool. Yeah, so I got a murder of crows on me.
Yeah.
So that's the crow story.
And so you were telling me you wanted to talk a little bit about your experiences of getting tattooed in Japan. So did you get the ones on your back in Japan?
Yeah, so the two on my back I got in Japan by the same artist. His name is Yomi Komiyake, and he's based out of Tokyo. But he travels around Asia. I think he's been to Europe a few times, and he tattoos at conventions or wherever you want him to be. Sometimes at, you know, other people's studios and stuff like that. So I got my first tattoo pretty late in life. I got it when I was 27.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had the idea for a couple years. I wanted a wind-up clockwork crow. I was living in Japan, and tattooing there is, first of all, pretty frowned upon. It's associated with the mafia there, the Yakuza.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not getting a traditional Japanese tattoo, you...
With the hammering and the...
No, the style. So even the Yakuza, I don't think, necessarily get the hammering thing.
Okay.
They use, like, a gun or something. Okay. So I didn't really know where to start in Tokyo. But I had this friend who had a bunch of animals tattooed on him. And I really liked the style. It was kind of like, not Americana, not Japanese traditional, but, like, something in between. So I was like, okay, can you introduce me to your tattoo artist? And he was like, yeah, of course. So I met with the guy. I had my idea.
Did you mention you lived in Japan for a little while?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I've been in Japan for a couple of years. Yeah. And this is this is important. If you ever plan to go to Japan to get a tattoo, it's very rare that you'll find a tattoo artist who speaks English. So I highly recommend finding someone who can also speak Japanese to go with you. Because you don't want to... I don't know, Michael, have you ever tattooed anyone who doesn't speak English?
I have tattooed a few people that do not speak any English.
Yeah. So what's that like?
It's interesting. I mean, I've tattooed, like, deaf people who we've communicated back and forth, like, either, like, a sidekick or, like, writing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely some people who spoke Spanish and, like, no to little English. Mm-hmm. And it's always good if there's, like, a translator there. You'd be surprised. Like, some people, I think, just come in expecting that there will be somebody who's, like, bilingual or somebody who can, like, sign. But mm-hmm. most of the time, us tattoo artists are not like that at all. So it definitely adds to the situation. I mean, nothing like, I like to sit down somebody and, like, right as I'm about to tattoo and be like, okay, so here we go. You know, the first couple of minutes are going to be bad, and you'll get endorphins and adrenaline, and you'll feel better. Just stay still. And then you say that to somebody who has no idea what you're saying, and you just kind of start going, you know, they hear gibberish, and then you start, like, stabbing them with a needle. So always interesting, I'm sure, for both people.
And I imagine, like, asking them what they want and like discussing that is kind of hard if they don't speak your language. So I speak Japanese, but I'm not perfect at it. So I basically like described it as best I could. And Yomi is like the sweetest guy. He's about 5 foot nothing. Like really cool. And he like helped me through like very simple Japanese. So it was very good. He has a girlfriend now who speaks English, so if she's there, I'm trying to plug him, by the way, if anybody wants to.
Does he have an Instagram?
Yes, he does. I think it's Yomi Komiyake. I'll have to look it up. But maybe we can link it. All right. So I went in, and he's like, okay, give me a couple days to draw it up. He drew it up. He showed me it in person because we were, like, at a party at the same time. And I was, like, floored. I was like, I love it. And then it got to about a week before I was supposed to get it. And I started to get cold feet. I started to have, like, anxiety dreams about it. I was feeling sick. I was thinking, what if... So at that time, I was planning on staying in Japan. And in Japan, you cannot go to public pools, public baths. You can't go to a lot of beaches if you have a visible tattoo.
Sure.
I planned on having it on my back so I could cover it, like, at work. But if anybody found out, I worked at a very conservative company. If anybody found out, it could be a problem. Oh, wow. I don't know. Yeah. So I was starting to panic. So I did the bad thing that any client would do. A couple days before, I canceled. And this was a 4-hour tattoo. And I felt like shit. I didn't give a deposit or anything like that. But Yomi, because he's a saint, was like, that's fine. Everybody gets nervous. I'll keep your design. And anytime you want it, please let me know.
Yeah. I've had to cancel on Michael once. But it was because, like, my parents hate him. And they, like, surprised me. And they're like, hey, we're here in town. I was like, crap.
You should have brought them with you. And be like, see, Mom and Dad, it's not that bad. Ow. Yeah. So then I sat on it for a year.
Nice.
And right around my birthday, I was like, I'm going to get it. So I scheduled the appointment. He was like, I'm so glad you're back. I made a little adjustments to the drawing, but here it is. Went in. He said, you can watch a movie or whatever you want while you're doing it. So I was watching The Lord of the Rings, the director's cut, and a little bit of The Two Towers. That was about 4 hours. And it hurt. It wasn't a great feeling, but I got it done, and I was so happy that I got two more, and nice. I want to get more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the other one that I have on my back is also by him. And that was, like, no hesitation, like, hey, I'm back!
That's kind of, yeah, like, when I first met Michael, he did this big line on my arm, and I told him that I'd sat on that design for, like, almost 2 years mm-hmm. before I finally did, because it was my first visible, like, I can't really hide this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I was like, my general practice, because I have another one on my calf that I'd done years before, I was like, my general practice was to find a design I like and to start a mental clock, and if I like it a year later, then I should get it. Whereas now, every few months, I'm like, hey, I think I like this.
So, the one on my arm was a decision made within, like, 48 hours.
Yeah. And so, I don't know how much you can talk about that, because so people in a few months can see you on a TV show, right?
Yeah. Maybe a few months, maybe. Okay. So, I'm on a TV show that's airing May 8th. It's called Single Dad Seeking. Yay. It's on TLC. Woo! please check it out. I'm not saying it's related to my tattoo on my arm.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying it's not. But, yeah, so that was like a 48-hour decision. So it's like getting shorter and shorter. But I also, I try to get, my goal is to get one tattoo a year.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is because, like, in the summer and like spring in Austin, I like to wear shorts and tank tops and stuff. And it's kind of hard to cover a healing tattoo in the summer when it's hot. So I try to schedule it like at the end of summer, like September, October, November. I guess it would be November here. But, yeah. So, that's why it's more, like, going to be once a year, I think, for me.
Yeah. The last couple of years, like, I've had a pattern of right before Fantastic Fest, which is in September, getting a new one. And, like, May, I think I told you a couple weeks ago, I was like, I think I want to set some time in May, and we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, is that stigma in Japan still, like, very much that way, or...?
Oh, yeah. So, Japanese traditional style tattooing, obviously, is extremely popular in the U.S. It's not so much popular in Japan, and the biggest reason is because it's associated with the Yakuza, the mafia. So tattooing has had a long, long history in Japan. It's been part of Japanese culture for thousands of years. But around in the late 19th century, they outlawed tattooing. The main reason was because Westerners were not tattooed. So only like sailors got tattoos, yeah. And you didn't want to be associated with those scummy people. So the emperor outlawed tattoos. As a result, only criminals had tattoos. So for many years, it was against the law until it was legalized in the 1940s. And part of the reason was because the U.S. was occupying Japan, and a lot of American GIs had tattoos. So they were, you know, going into bars or restaurants with short sleeves on, and they had visible anchors and, you know, different typical sailor tattoos. So they couldn't arrest them. So they made it legal.
So when you say outlawed, it wasn't necessarily like doing tattoos or getting tattoos. It was having tattoos.
Having tattoos.
Okay.
So,
because people ask me that about Oklahoma all the time. They're like, oh, it legalized, so you couldn't have tattoos? Like, you had to hide them? I'm like, no, you could be tattooed. You just couldn't do them or get them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So traditional Japanese clothing generally covers most of your body. So the traditional Japanese tattoos stop at a certain point. So the sleeve will stop, like, right where, you know, like a shirt sleeve would stop. It's kind of hard to describe on a microphone, but they would have like a tattoo line that's kind of down like your scapula, like down your breastbone.
Right.
And then there'd be, so that would be like, you know, a kimono, where a kimono would cut off.
Yeah. Like, so, and they look kind of like they're wearing like a dress shirt sort of.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah. Right. So that's how they would hide their tattoos. I mean, they would get them done, you know, underground. But, you know, once you legalize something like that, it doesn't necessarily become, you know, part of normal society.
Yeah.
So in the 20th century, it was still pretty much associated with the mafia. Then, I'm not sure exactly when this happened. I don't know if this was always the case after they legalized it. But technically, a tattoo artist has to be a medical doctor in Japan. You have to have a medical license to be a tattoo artist, because a tattoo is considered a medical procedure. Michael, are you a doctor?
Dr. Mike.
Dr. Mike. How many tattoo artists do you know who are doctors?
I don't think I know any tattoo artists that are doctors.
So, yeah, Japan...
I mean, why would you want to be a tattoo artist if you're a doctor? Doctors are so cool, man. They just have the coolest job. They get to go party all the time. They're, like, saving lives. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been on the books for a very long time, but it was kind of a gray area. They wouldn't really police it.
Yeah.
Up until recently, one of the second largest city in Japan, Osaka... The mayor there is very conservative, and he decided to crack down on tattoo artists. So,
artists operating while not being doctors.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So, basically, it's a fine. It's not, like, jail time or anything, but it's, like, $3,000. So, if you're caught, you're, you know, it's, you got to pay that money, and then, like, you could lose your job at the tattoo shop, you could lose clients. It's just, like, not a good situation for you. So, right now, there's actually, they're trying to get rid of that law, but I don't have a good feeling about it. I don't think it's gonna go away anytime soon, because, there was a, when I was still there, like, 3 years ago, they decided to ban tattoos from this beach called Zushi Beach, and it's known for being, like, I don't know, something like 30 to 40% Navy guys, like U.S. Navy guys, and, yeah, like, all of them are tattooed. So it's also, like, a way of, like, weeding out the riffraff to them. So, like, if they ban tattoos, then the bad people won't go to the beach and cause trouble.
Yeah.
That's the reasoning. If they ban tattoos from a public bathhouse or from a public pool, there won't be bad people there. And I know we're all very bad people because we have tattoos, right? We're dangerous criminals with tattoos. So it's kind of a... It was kind of interesting. Like, that's why... That was one of the reasons why I was just so torn about getting a tattoo there. Just, like, I didn't know. I was like, I'm already, like, considered a bad person by virtue of not being Japanese. Now I'm putting this stamp on me that's like, ooh, I'm dangerous.
Yeah.
I might be associated with the mafia with my not Japanese traditional crow tattoo.
So, I guess here in the U.S., I mean, the stigma, I guess, for the most part is gone nowadays, it seems like.
I mean, it depends on where you go and, like, who you're around. I mean, there's definitely a stigma. But just real quick, I want to jump back to, I wish I knew more about this Japanese medical licensing. Because I need to emphasize that we are, like, licensed as tattooers here. We're just not licensed as, like, doctors.
Yeah.
So I don't know the fine, like, difference in, like, that. So if anybody out there listening knows any of that information, like, if you're a tattooer from Japan or you know a tattooer from Japan... I'm kind of curious as to what the difference is. Is it something similar to what we have where we're, like, licensed through the state, like through the health department to be a tattooer?
I guess how much learning or education do you get to be certified or licensed? Or
Let me just say that from, like, state to state, depending on, like, what the regulations are, some states are very, like, strict. Some states are a little bit more relaxed. I mean, typically... I guess in the state of Texas, there's not much that, as an individual, the tattooer needs to do. The shop is licensed. Therefore, the shop goes through the health department. They have somebody come out and inspect the area, make sure that it works, that everything that's required is there, that we have, like, a sterilizer, and we have to do spore testing on the sterilizer. You'll have to forgive me if I don't remember all these details correctly. Like, every 2 weeks, every week, maybe once a month, to make sure that it's working properly, and then be licensed and insured. So then, therefore, anybody who's tattooing at one of those shops is licensed through that license.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then some other states I go to tattoo, I have to be licensed individually, and the shop is also licensed. Typically, like, requirements for that is, like, some kind of proof that you've been tattooing for a certain amount of time. Then you need bloodborne pathogens, first aid, CPR. So you have to have all those, like, up to date per year. It's nothing, like, too crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all stuff that kind of, like, basically just, like, revolves around being clean.
Yeah.
Like, knowing how to handle a situation if somebody were to have, like, I have no idea when I would need CPR during a tattoo. But, hey, if somebody passes out and I got to give them CPR, I know how.
Yeah.
That's good.
First aid's good, you know, because I bandage tattoos all day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I am in full support of tattoo artists being licensed. Like, when I go somewhere, I want to know that I'm in a safe environment, that I'm not going to get something or get an infection or whatever. But in Japan, it is you have to go to medical school. So it's almost like... being like Botox or something like that. where that's performed by a, I'm not exactly sure what type of doctor, but it's some kind of doctor. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's kind of like, it's got to be some kind of dermatology.
One's the, like, cosmetic tattooing is more of a procedure of going to, like, a class and getting, like, licensed specifically for that. Which might be the same or might be a little bit more strict than, like, tattooing.
Yeah. So because of all that, you don't have to say how much you spent. Was it, like, crazy expensive?
So, it wasn't that much more expensive than it would be here. So it was more like he based his prices on size rather than time. So it was, he said like CD case size was like 400,000 yen, which is, I don't know what the exchange rate is now, but it's about $400. So, I got like a discount cause I was friends with the guy and stuff like that. But you know, $400 for something that's CDK size. I mean, that sounds.
What is CDK?
Like a CD case.
Oh,
like
CD case.
Like, remember CDs?
I was hearing like CDK and thinking like, what is the acronym CDK? So you said it was a 4-hour tattoo, $400. I mean, there are some tattooers that charge 100 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds pretty close to like what you would pay here.
Yeah. And it's a lot of colors and like shading. Like I remember Paul Gandersman's brother, he said it's not a huge tattoo, but because of the way the shading worked together, it took a long time.
Yeah. Andrew's tattoo... And the one I did on Paul, like the one
that looks like an ice cream cone. Yeah,
oh my God.
I tease him and say it looks like an ice cream cone.
Both of those.
What's
tattoos,
it supposed to be?
It's an Evangelion robot.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It looks like an ice cream cone. Yeah. I can't picture how that could have happened.
I'll say both of those tattoos were so time intensive. Like, I mean, they were small. They're probably the size of like two fists. So maybe. You know, 3-4 inches high by 2-3 inches wide, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, typically something like that, hour and a half, 2 hours. Now, I probably spent at least 3 or 4 hours on each of those tattoos mm-hmm. just because of the amount of detail that went into them.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the end of the day, they healed up good. They look awesome. Paul, like, loves it. Andrew loves it. Couldn't be more happy to have those tattoos out there walking around, people seeing them and, like, wondering, like, ooh, who did that tattoo?
Yeah.
That's always good.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you want.
Sarah, I'm curious. So you said the ones on your back took like 4 hours. Have you kind of figured out, is that sort of your time limit on?
Yeah. So I was lying on my stomach, for those with like my arms sort of, bent and up with like my hands by my head and my head turned to one side, on the bed.
Yeah.
And part of it was that position got really uncomfortable, and we took breaks, so...
Yeah.
I think, especially towards the end, we took a break, like, every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that was because I was, like, at the end of my rope.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm... 4 hours is probably my maximum.
The big one here in my arm was, like, 3 hours, and I never told him, and I was close to... wanting to have to come back the next day.
Oh, really?
But I was right, almost right there, right? As he was like, all right, I'm done. I was like, thank God.
Thank God.
It was funny, like, I was watching Game of Thrones when I was getting my second one done. Whatever season it was that Joffrey died in. But, like,
spoiler
he was...
alert.
Joffrey's dead!
Sorry!
Joffrey's dead!
Spoiler for something that happened, like, 3 years ago. But like he was finishing just as Joffrey was dying, and like I was friends with his girlfriend.
Were you watching it live? Or...
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was like we downloaded it.
Okay.
And his girlfriend was like, "Yay, Joffrey died!" And I was like, "Yay, he's finished."
I just imagine this slightly different as you like being sad about it and turning around as he's like, "We're finishing." You're crying. He's like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." I'm like, no, it's this guy. And then Game of Thrones, he's dead.
Oh no, we're happy when Joffrey dies.
Yeah. So we're gonna transition a little bit into. I always kind of want to end every episode, sort of the way painting the picture. See what I did there? Of
inking
of what it's like to be in a tattoo shop. And whenever I've been getting tattooed by Michael, at some point he'll kind of ask me about some of the stuff he's seen lately. And so we were talking about this beforehand. So I just kind of like to end every episode with a little session of for now, I'll call it shooting the shit in the shop. But
or shh, shh.
Yeah. So you recently, because you seemed like you really wanted to talk about it, you've seen the Point Break remake?
I did sit down and watch the Point Break remake the other day. I'm not going to lie. I think, like, when I first heard that they were going to be making the remake, of course, I was, like, bummed out. Like, I'm a fan of the original. I like it, as ridiculous as it can be at times. But upon seeing the trailer for the remake, I think I was probably the only person I knew that was actually kind of excited, because I kind of thought the trailer looked awesome.
I mean, for the most part, I'll give pretty much anything a chance. And so I had written off the idea of the Point Break remake, but I was like, I'll probably see that.
Yeah, it looked like basically a ton of action. And that excited me. I was like, this is going to be super badass. And I will say, like, in that sense, like, watching the movie, there was a ton of action. I would say maybe a half to a little bit more of the action scenes were, like, believable or, like, looked cool. But there was definitely a few scenes that were just dumb ridiculous.
How?
Like, there's a part at the very end, you know, in the original Point Break.
I have not seen the original Point Break, and I've not seen the remake.
Let's see. I mean, should we give a synopsis for it so it all makes sense? But so basically, this guy who's an FBI agent who is trying to track down and stop these criminals infiltrates into their gang and somewhat becomes friends with them and kind of, like, I feel like kind of teeters, like, on the edge of, like, being friends with them but then wanting to stop them because they're bad guys but respecting them but wanting to stop them. So in the original movie, there's a point where the main bad guy gets away. And at some point, Keanu Reeves meets back up with him at this, like, huge, giant, like, wave. And the guy's like, hey, man, this is, like, a once-in-a-lifetime chance to surf. And he's like, you're just going to die out there. And basically, like, lets him go, knowing that most likely he's going to die. He very well could escape. But gives him, like, that chance. Like, doesn't want to, like, rob that from him.
Yeah.
So in the remake, it's very similar. There's a huge storm and, like, this surf going on. And he, like, somehow tracks the guy down in the middle of the ocean. The only guy out there on, like, one, like, little dinghy of a boat. And he's out there in a helicopter and, like, zip lines down, like, from the helicopter onto the boat. Talks to the guy. The guy is telling him, like, oh, you know, you should, like, let me do this. And then just goes right back up into the helicopter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it looked so terrible. Like, this boat is so small. It's, like, the tiniest, like, little boat. And this guy just coming down on, like, a rope from a helicopter, landing on it with these, like, waves that are, like, super gigantic next to it.
Yeah, there's, like, a ton of things that are crazy about that scene. Because, like, presumably the guy flying the helicopter is also an FBI agent.
Yeah.
And so when he gets back onto the helicopter, there has to be a conversation of, hey, why didn't you arrest that guy? You were there.
He'll die anyway.
Yeah. One of the biggest problems with it is, so, like, I think it actually starts out cool, despite having an opening that ripped off the opening of Cliffhanger. And
yeah, when they were showing previews, I thought it was a remake of Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Like, before they were, like, introduced the whole surfing thingy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Well, and so then it gets to, he's following these criminals who are committing these acts, and it seems like they're robbing stuff, but they're really, they're extreme environmentalists, and they're giving back to the earth, and so...
Damn those people.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really get the sense of environmentalists is more so like kind of like Robin Hood.
Right.
Like, it seemed like they were kind of stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Like, they were stealing for, like, no purpose other than the thrill of stealing.
Yeah.
And it, like, kind of aiding them in doing this weird eight-pointed, I don't know, kind of like Buddhist.
Yeah.
I forget, like, what it was called that they did. And I thought that was interesting.
And that's, yeah, that was kind of an interesting idea, but there's, like, a whole almost hour in the middle of it where it's a bunch of conversations and, like, literally nothing happens, and it's like, man, this is boring.
Yeah.
And that movie just, like, went completely under my radar.
Yeah.
Like, let's just say that the movie, in my opinion, is not as boring as one of the main actors in the movie. He was boring.
Yeah, and it's Edgar Ramirez, who's been, he's a really talented actor. He was in Joy. He played Jennifer Lawrence's husband.
He played Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He played her husband in the movie Joy, and he's been in a bunch of other stuff. He's really talented, and yeah, it's especially in an action movie, to make him boring is kind of a weird accomplishment in and of itself. Oh, but yeah.
Mark this. This Fantastic Fest, that guy's going to be there and come up and tap me on the shoulder. So, I heard you think I'm boring.
Can I be your apprentice? I'm going to give up this acting thing and try tattooing.
Cool. Well, that is going to about do it for this week at the Tattoo Shop. We want to thank Sarah for coming on, being our first guest.
Thank you very much.
I feel honored.
Yeah.
And she never came back.
So besides oneofus.net and Rage Select, is there anywhere else we can find you? Or
You can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Devour. That's SarahDevour. That's correct. Yeah. Sarah Devour. Yeah, listen to me on oneofus.net, of course, and RageSelect.com. And tune in to TLC on May 8th. I don't know what time yet, but...
can you give us a quick premise of... It's called Single Dad CD, guess we can figure out sort of what it's
So you're going to hear me plugging this a lot, like very shamelessly or shamefully, maybe I should say. I went to live with my boyfriend in Indianapolis, and it was about us... being us.
Nice.
Yeah, and he's big into tattoos. He's, like, covered basically collarbone to toe in tattoos. So, yeah, maybe he'll listen to this. Probably not. Definitely not. He will not listen to this.
Yeah. And so, Michael, on Instagram, you are at Bearded Gentleman.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah. Unless you think it would be giving preference to some of your clients, but have you had any pieces you particularly liked doing this week, or
people
to check out on Instagram?
I mean, a good question I get asked all the time is like, "Hey, what was the favorite thing you've tattooed?" And it always seems to be the last or second to last tattoo I've done.
Yeah.
I think it's just like the newest, the one I'm most excited about, or I feel like I put everything I have into like that one, and then I do another one. I'm like. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't want to pick favorites, I think you started it, but you're doing a really cool chest piece of a wolf on someone.
Yeah. Yeah. My client Sam.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. He's super awesome, man. That guy right there is like the textbook best client. You know, he had two referrals to me, contacted me, set up a consultation, came in, we talked, put down a deposit. He told me, "Hey, I want to do a sleeve." And, you know, a lot of people come in, "I want to do big stuff. I want to do a sleeve. I want to do a back piece." The thing about tattoos, if you haven't figured it out, they're expensive.
Yeah.
So I try to talk to everybody about budget. Like, you know, "Hey, here's how much I charge per hour. This is how many hours I like to do minimum if we're doing something big. So it's going to cost you about this much per session. Like, how often do you want to do a session? You can do every week. You can do every 2 weeks. You can do once a month." Realistically, like, budget that stuff, because I've had numerous people like tell me they can do that, and I get it. I totally understand, but like, just don't try to bite off more than you can chew. If you can do once a month, do once a month. That guy at the time, you know, things were going really well for him at work, and he really wanted that sleeve, and I think we did like every 2 weeks for a while. He showed up for every appointment. Probably like the longest was the first appointment, just because he'd been referred, he liked my work, but kind of suggested some things, and we worked on a design, and I felt like there was a decent level of trust, but still like a little like, "I hope this turns out good."
Mm-hmm.
Did the tattoo. He loved it. You know, second tattoo came in, we talked about it, a lot less like resistance. And I mean that in a good way, like typical resistance, but you know, did the second tattoo, loved it. By the time we got to the third one, I was just kind of like, "Hey man, this is sort of what I want. Just let me do my thing." You know, then he would maybe just like send me a picture of like tattoos he liked.
Yeah.
And I would draw something that was like very similar, or something that had like all the same like symbols or design characters of it. And just eventually, over like a period of like maybe 2.5 months, we did his whole sleeve. And it's up there. It's up there in like one of my favorite like sets of tattoos. Like, I think it's super cool. Like, if that could be my sleeve, I would be more than happy to like walk around, you know, wearing it. Like, I kind of wish it was my sleeve, but
let's skin him.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sometimes there are those tattoos that I just don't want to let you leave with.
You'll never leave this shop.
Cool. So yeah, check that out on Instagram. Really cool chess piece of a wolf. Like I said, you can find me on Twitter at JCDeLeon1. Same thing on Instagram. I've got a picture of some of the tattoos I have, but mostly you'll just see pictures of my cat.
equally interesting.
She is. I love her. Her name is Spade. But yeah, until next time, we will see you then.